on Tuesday and Wednesday. Partly sunny both days with high temperatures only in the upper 40s. We'll make it back into the 50s on Thursday with a chance for rain at the end of the week on Friday. From the WCBM Weather Center, this is Tony Pan.
Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Thank you, Mrs. Stacy Guerin and Jay Lenahan and Anne Marie Coleman McDonald, this year's Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade, for presenting the first annual Irish Heritage Photo Contest and Exhibit at Zella's Pizzeria, 1145 Holland Street in Baltimore. Exhibit runs through April the 14th, and public voting will determine the winners. It's sponsored by the Maryland Irish Festival. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Cordner. Our engineer is Jake Bryant. With Dan Brown's new book and film being released this late spring and summer, you'll be hearing a great deal more about secret societies, the founding fathers, America's symbols, and the District of Columbia or Washington, D.C., and a lot more about it. And the shows we did in 2006 are still running after 3 years. That's hard to believe, on the History, National Geographic, Discovery, and the German channels, and are going to be revived and updated this spring with shows that we've just completed with the History, Discovery, Canadian Television, which has just sold. We heard its programming to World Television. Now, please remember, Dan Brown's writings and films are entertainment. They're not necessarily factual, you know, you got to sell a little bit here, and as such are not documented history. Well, not necessarily document history. And following the success of the Da Vinci Code in 2003 and the intrigue and curiosity now about subjects like Roslyn, the Templars, the Grail, etc., we have with us tonight Dr. Karen Rawls, occasionally been dubbed by the U.S. media as the female Professor Langdon figure in today's world. Dr. Rawls is also seen as knowledgeable about not only the history and heritage about the medieval Templars, but also an expert on their symbolism, seals, and relics. Thank heavens for that. Now, an international lecturer, conference speaker, History Channel resource, and former deputy curator of a key Roslyn Chapel exhibition, she is currently working on compiling a huge encyclopedia of medieval wisdom to delve deeper into the world of the High Middle Ages and these fascinating medieval topics that still intrigue us today, especially for myself. Go to her website, ancientquest.com. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Dr. Karen Rawls.
Well, hello, Dr. Bob. It's very much a privilege to be back, and I'm certainly, like many of us, I have also very much enjoyed your work, and I thank you for the efforts you've put in. And I think, as you say, we are now on another wave of interest in many of these topics, and, of course, a deepening of our knowledge has come forth in the last few years.
The Knights Templar has become more popular than cheeseburgers here in the United States. It's true.
Well, they're popular here, too, actually, over here in England, yep.
Yeah, but what motivated the beginning of the Knights Templars in 1119?
Well, the Knights Templar, today we hear that and we think the famed White Knights of the Crusades, the white mantle and the big red cross. And we often forget about their beginnings. And I know there's a lot of questions and fascinating research being done about their ending, but their beginning is very intriguing also. And the main issue is when they began, of course, and why they began. and who started them. The main reason was they had a terrible issue going on in the late, Middle Ages. This is about the 12th century, around when the Templars officially emerged in 1119. We know that there were originally 9 men from various elite families in the area of Burgundy, which is now the Champagne area of France, and also Flanders. So they were from Flemish and Burgundian elite stock, a lot of them. And they were summoned to help solve a major problem, ostensibly, was to defend the major highways and byways going to Jerusalem to protect the pilgrims. I mean, there was an issue of a lot of dangerous travel and bandits practically around every corner at that time. Of course, the Saracens versus the Crusaders and everything. So the Templars began in the backdrop of a very difficult time. And the church at first heard lots of increasing stories about pilgrims getting attacked or robbed on their way to Rome and even, especially on the way to Jerusalem. So finally, you might say the straw that broke the camel's back was actually Easter of 1119. What happened then was 300 pilgrims were attacked and taken prisoner, and many were killed, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the last cry. And the Pope decided something should be done, and ostensibly we have rather suddenly these 9 men appearing before King Baldwin II on the Temple Mount area to offer themselves as a fledgling new order of knights who would help protect the pilgrim routes. So that is, you might say, the Orthodox official account. And in a very real sense, they were needed for that purpose. But as we know, it's hard to imagine that only 9 men could police all of the highways and byways in the area. And, of course, the question remains, of what were they doing for what we know to be at least a 9-year period before the Templars became official? And that happened at a big event, like a big conference called the Council of Troy, where all the churchmen and the Pope, everyone met, especially under the direction of one of the key founders and lobbyists of the Templars, St. Bernard of Clairvaux. And he really lobbied to help the church approve these 9 men to make them an official order, the Order of the Temple. So we know it's just about 9 and a half years. So we know that there wasn't much growth in the order during that time, but we have very few records that have actually survived about these first 9 years. And what has survived is contradictory. So that's partly why there's all the speculation. In a sense, speculation can be a very good thing. Nothing is ingrained in stone until proven otherwise, as we say in history. So again, it's okay to speculate. However, we have to be careful, especially with topics like the Knights Templar, not to go inadvertently too far the other way.
Well, but, I'm certain that that's one of the big problems in all areas of research now.
But I think behind that is a very healthy interest in history and heritage. And as you mentioned in the intro, especially as Americans, what are our symbols? What do they mean? Like the Statue of Liberty and the flag, these very powerful ancient symbols. The Templars, of course, were bloodthirsty crusaders and the Pope's militia on one level, no question about it. And on the other, many believe maybe they were digging for treasure or they found something and underneath the Temple Mount, which, of course, again, no records have survived. We don't know for sure. Archaeologists today do know that there is an extensive water works and tunnels under there, but there's no proof that the Knights Templar found anything per se. Partly because the records are so scarce. No one can say for sure one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But we cannot automatically make big assumptions. But there are very interesting conglomeration of events and people around this whole movement, which ended up being what you could possibly call, the largest first Western multinational organization. From these original 9 men, ended up having well over 2,000 commanderies, which is like a local, perhaps a state office. The national headquarters would be in Jerusalem, and many, many countries in Europe had Templar preceptories and commanderies. So it grew and grew and grew. They did carefully protect pilgrims. They did do that. That's not just a myth. They actually did. And they had an extensive shipping network. They shipped wine, produce, and pilgrims. Quite an amazing combo. They also, we know, had extensive diplomatic dealings with the Saracens, the purported enemy, and that is part of the rub of the accusation much later for supposedly cavorting with the enemy. But we have to remember, in those days, you know, technically there was no State Department, there was only the Church. So the Templars, when they won many battles, which of course they very famed for, we know, they would send diplomats to Saladin and his forces, and they would also send one back to the Christian side, and there was all kinds of negotiations going on. Towards that end, we know that there were some Saracen translators and interpreters within the Templar contingent, and that is mentioned in parts of their rule. So we know that they were very, very high up and important in what we might today think of as quite a secular capacity, you know. Mm-hmm. They were extremely dedicated. We know that the sort of men the Templars were today is really hard for us, you know, with our many freedoms and to come and go as we please and everything. But back then, you know, it wasn't just merely a praying monk in a monastery. It was the concept that made the Templars different from, say, the Benedictines, Cistercians, the usual monastic orders that were very noble and around at the time. The Templars went one step further. The thing that they did was at the instigation of Bernard of Clairvaux, the idea of a fighting militia that would not only pray, but also fight. And the concept of martyrdom and the color red, which of course the Red Cross, the concept of martyrdom was one of their major underlying beliefs and philosophy, and protection of certain family bloodlines, and also winning, of course, the Holy Land for the Christians as much as they could possibly do. They were never, ever allowed to stop fighting as long as the official flag was up on the battlefield. They could not leave the battlefield. If they did, they would be instantly defrocked, as we would say today for a priest. You could not continue. Their mantle would be taken from them, which was a great shame. So the point being, they really were, perhaps today we might think of a very austere, dedicated, totally focused force, perhaps like the Delta Forces, the Marines, SAS, that kind of very difficult training and awareness and focus. So I'm just trying to give it just a general background of the kind of absolute dedication and total focus that they had on many levels.
Well, it certainly is important to realize that the depth of their belief, and because many individuals who've written some really fascinating books on this particular topic really overdo that. What I mean by overdoing it, they have speculated beyond belief in regards to what they have found, the hidden knowledge that the Templars possessed or allegedly possessed. And I think that's what I'd like to focus on now. What did they allegedly find in the Holy Land? You related a little earlier that it was possibly artifacts or perhaps even gold or whatever. But what kind of knowledge did they really gain in doing this? Because I have a deep feeling that they were more about the inner man rather than the external man.
Yes, very well put, very well put. I think basically, just to slightly backtrack to what hidden knowledge were they alleged to possess, I think the first thing, of course, I know historians can be a bit of a stickler for detail, but, you know, there are things called archives, okay? We have libraries today, and I know a lot of students hate to do exams and tests, especially in history, but we do have quite a few remains, ironically, from certain of the individualized countries regarding the Knights Templar from 12th, 13th century in particular. Like from Spain, we have some examples in France that have survived, fragments here and there, that's my point. Because of that, we have a situation where we have piecemeal evidence that we have to put together. The problem, and again, partly why there has been so much speculation, is that the central archive was lost.
We'll find out more about what happened to the central archive of actual Templar records after this break. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and we're listening to an interview with Oxford scholar Dr. Karen Rawls, author of The Knights Templar Encyclopedia, The Essential Guide to the People, Places, Events, and Symbols of the Order of the Temple, published by New Page Books, 1-800-227-3371. Find out more from Karen Rawls' website, www.ancientquest.com. That's ancientquest.com. We'll be right back.
In search of a quality, top-of-the-line assisted living community while also trying to sell your home, Harmony Hall is the place for you. We understand the current events as well as your healthcare needs. That is why we are working hard to establish a program where you move in before your home sells. Visit www.myhchp.com for more information.
Nate, technician for Safelite Auto Glass.
Torn up roads can cause big problems for windshields. My last customer ignored a small chip on his. He drove over a pothole a little fast and crack. He could have saved time and money with a Safelite repair. When a chip's smaller than a dollar bill, we can usually repair it without removing the windshield. Plus, with most insurance plans, it's free. Yep, free.
Just one call to 1-800-800-ASAP takes care of everything with your insurer.
Safelite repair, Safelite replace.
Who wears ThermaCare? People like Mike Beach.
Landscaping's a great business, but this body can take a beating.
The targeted relief of ThermaCare heat wraps.
You put it on and wow, relief right where I need it.
ThermaCare has patented heat cells that deliver real heat that penetrates deep.
Feels so good.
Relaxes tight muscles all day.
ThermaCare is relief I need to keep me moving.
Just wear ThermaCare.
It's my secret weapon.
And wear it where it hurts. Use as directed.
If you wear safety toe shoes on the job, here's some good news. Now there's a safety toe with 44% more room in the toe box. So much more toe room, they're called King Toe. Best of all, King Toe work boots are genuine Red Wing. So you also get premium leathers, hand stitching, and legendary Red Wing construction. King Toe from Red Wing Shoes. Built to fit, built to last. Since 1905.
Red Wing has shovel-ready boots for your job. Find a store near you at redwingshoes.com.
The views and opinions of the guests and hosts you hear are not necessarily those of the owners, management, or advertisers of Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890, thesellingwell.com. American history has been characterized by single moments that have defined movements. Now, with only 10% of blind children learning Braille in school, the time for a new defining moment is upon us. Join the NFB for a very special moment in the Braille literacy movement as we launch the 2009 Lewis Braille Bicentennial Silver Dollar. Funds from the sale of the coin go to the National Federation of the Blind to develop and implement effective programs to increase Braille literacy among blind children and adults. For more information, visit www.braille.org. www.braille.org.
This is Dr. Richard Bartlett, founder of Matrix Energetics, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and we're listening to an interview we recorded last week with medieval historian Dr. Karen Rawls on her New Page Books publication called The Knights Templar Encyclopedia. You can order it by calling 1-800-227-3371. That's 1-800-227-3371. Or from ancientquest.com. That's ancientquest.com. We left Karen Rawls, who was about to tell us what happened to the official historical archive of the Templar records that vanished from history several hundred years ago. Let's find out what she says probably happened to this archive.
There's quite a history as to what happened to it. We know that this would have been today, for example, a huge company like IBM or something. The headquarters office would have, you know, the national headquarters would have all the major important records, minutes of meetings. In this case, the Templars had very, very expensive mortgages for land, you might say, the deeds of the land, who owned what and where. Now, that's been very frustrating for historians. A lot of that has been lost. It started out in Jerusalem, obviously, the headquarters, and then after the fall of the Holy Land in 1191, it moved to Acre on the coast, and then after 1291, very devastating loss for Christianity then in that area, to Cyprus, the island of Cyprus. So the records were transferred, and that would have included any relics as well, to that area. But then after the official suppression of the order, the arrests we know were, of course, in the famed Friday the 13th of 1307, and then after a series of trials, the order was officially suppressed by order of the Vatican, but that was in 1312. Now, after that, the official records eventually were given over to the rivals of the Templars, the Knights Hospitaller. Today, their modern-day branch is the Order of St. John. So those records that would have been medieval Templar were then transferred to their rivals after 1312. But then the battles of history went on, and Cyprus in particular became a focus, and the Turks captured Cyprus, the Ottoman Turks, and one of the most devastating attacks was in about 1571. And it is believed by many historians today that presumably at that point we lose track of many of the medieval Templar and medieval Hospitaller records. A few have survived, but not very many. That was the loss of the central archive, a big chunk of it, shall we say. And that was a major tragic loss. So that we don't have, okay? What we do have, some people like to say, oh, there's no records left at all, therefore we can speculate and go on and, you know. Actually, we do have records. We do, and we are still translating some of them, and there are more and more that are showing up in various local libraries and regional areas. So, again, that information, as it's further translated, my point being, the jury is still out.
When they're translated, what languages are they being translated from?
Well, it depends on where they were found. Whether it was Portugal, Spain, Italy, Germany. I mean, the Templars, in a sense, everyone in the modern-day EU, it's like, well, we have it's multilingual. Well, actually, the Knights Templar had to be multilingual. They often knew quite a few languages. They had a huge empire. Imagine a huge international corporation. The national headquarters was razed to the ground. The records are gone. But there's various branch offices. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there are various areas, various regions, various languages. So those throughout history, because of each nation had its own history and its own difficulties with storage and some things, sometimes there's fire, sometimes things were lost, whatever. So we're still finding things. There are fragments and there are also some objects, but I'll get to that later. But right now, there are questions about archives. We know the official archives because they have a certain seal of the Knights Templar on them, so we know they're genuine. And many have speculated that maybe the Templars found gold, as you mentioned, or treasures, or scrolls, perhaps. Some believe it was documents, although my counter-argument to that would be it's awful moist under there with the water cistern tunnels under this. I don't know if scrolls would have survived too well because, you know, if you know anything about scroll preservation in museums, it can be, you know, the humidity factor is, I mean, there's just all these practical issues you have to think about. But again, until we actually find something that is provable that it was Templar, then we cannot speculate any further on that for sure. But many have now believed that there could have been genealogical documents possibly. Again, the problem there is there are various viewpoints, and some arguments can be quite fierce, actually, among certain families about their medieval history. So, it, you know, again, even if there were documents found, then there's the question of are they accurate? And so far, we have not actually been able to, in the public domain anyway, we have not found anything provable that we can say the Templars found under the Templar Mount.
And that one of the reasons why I asked about the language was that my dear friend David Ovison, he is a master of about six or seven languages, and especially in regards to Nostradamus being written in an archaic French, my concerns were this. Ancient French is not the same as French today.
No, it's not. In fact, there's a couple of different branches. I mean, there's provincial. I mean, that, you know, I mean, yes, that's right. There are various areas. It's not the same as French today. That's right. Modern day French is a different language. I mean, medieval French isn't really, and it's very, quite different. You have to really delve into it and study it for a long time to master it. But that would have been a lot of, some of their material would have been in that. But fair amount was also in Latin because they were connected with the church. There's those issues. And then there's the other issue about, did they perhaps find a foundation stone, what they believed to be the original stone of the temple under there? And did they, in fact, bring that back to the West? That's been bantied around. And again, we can't prove that in black and white. It's very interesting because I know some Masonic historians have posited that idea that maybe they were not actually looking for gold at all, that they were actually searching for what in their mind would have been the original roots of the temple. But again, we don't have a diary the Templars left us. We don't have the records of the headquarters. We only have bits and pieces. So it's a piecemeal research dilemma.
But there have been some popular historical claims, especially in regards to the severed head of St. John the Baptist being in the hands of the Templars. Could you tell us about that possibility? Because that'd be a very difficult thing to prove.
Well, the interesting issue about the severed head, of course, I think there's been a lot of mystique about that since very early ancient Celtic times. The Arthurian legends talk about, you know, a head on a platter and all of that. And then, of course, the martyrdom idea of certain saints. And again, the Templars, in their own rule, very, very much emphasized and respected greatly any saint who was also a martyr in some way, male and female. I mean, to them, if someone was willing to die for their beliefs, they were worthy of a special feast day, so to speak. The idea of the severed head of John the Baptist has always been a hot potato, you might say, in the religious history. But ironically, it was actually the Hospitallers of St. John who did venerate the bearded head of St. John the Baptist, not the Knights Templar, especially after the suppression when the documents and any relics or objects were sent to their rivals, the Hospitallers. So we know from, they have a seal, one of their official seals of the order in France has an image of a severed head for the Hospitallers. So It's actually really more properly something to do with the Knights Hospitallers. There is a lot of speculation about the Joannine side of Christianity, which again, is believed to come from St. John. The evangelist and the Baptist is having a hand in that, and some Masonic scholars do maintain, of course, there's much debate in their camp as well, that the Joannine tradition of Christianity, a more esoteric stream perhaps, might have been closer to what the Knights Templar were actually about. The only thing with that, though, if you actually look at the rule they live by every day, it certainly is quite mainstream in a way, because it doesn't actually spell out any specific deviations from what we would today think of as quite mainstream Catholicism. So again, they were the Pope's militia. And if there were heretics, it probably would have been a minority group, an offshoot somewhere, but it certainly could not be said of the order as a whole. And ironically, they were never directly accused of heresy, not until near the time of the arrests and the suppression. Early on, the various rulers of Europe looked to them, as opposed to some of the other crusading orders, as being the most pure example of a good Christian fighting knight. In a way, their conduct was, they didn't have, like, for example, you know, tabloid-type sex scandals. None of that. Not hardly any of it in the Knights Templar. So they weren't suspect in that manner.
But that's what's so fascinating about this, that some of the claims that have been made about the Templars were actually about the Knights Hospitallers.
We have to remember that after 1312, there was a transfer over to the Hospitallers of the Templar material. But we don't have Templar records that say for sure what they believed or what they had. What we do have is their rule, and it does reveal quite a bit about what relics and symbols and seals that they had.
Well, let's go through that first, and then what destroyed them, because obviously they were doing the work that they were supposed to do, and for some reason they were a target of the church, and they had served the church so well, so why in the world would the church turn on? Well, I think we all know the answer, but
as a historian, no one can deny this on either side of the camp, so to speak. After the Templars returned from their initial 9 years or whatever, there is absolutely no question that following the Council of Troy, which again, remember, that's when they were made, quote, official order by the church, which is a very big movement because it often took a lot longer and you had to have a lot more men than nine to get that status. I mean, that was a really big point for this fledgling order of the temple. So from that point on, after 1128 onwards, it's really fascinating to note the meteoric rise of this fledgling order. They suddenly got all kinds of land and funding and money and interest, and that's undeniable. It is interesting to note. And many ask, well, they must have had something. And, of course, perhaps, you know, maybe they did, but we just don't know for sure. We can't prove if they did have it, what was it? Again, the speculation mounts. But that was one issue. But as far as, like, what was the plot against them or the question about why would such an illustrious order of, if anything, pristine Pope's militia who won all the battles, you know, ostensibly mainstream, why would they be attacked? You know, it just seems very odd. Well, of course, the extent of this organization today is hard for us to fathom how huge it was. Today, we would say it would be global, you know. In that time, it was this huge machinery, you might say, of power and incredible wealth. And it was the wealth and, after time, of course, the land and the issue of how they got their money was from very, very many sources. It wasn't just land and treasure goods, but they were actually officially not just knights, but the Templars had other functions. And it's here that it gets quite fascinating to research because, again, the records we have are often very practical, perhaps even boring to imagine going through medieval accounting records of sheep farming. Well, in certain areas, sheep were very valuable because wool was selling for a good price. The Champagne fairs, if you could come in with wool, certain quality, or you could sell it and create high-level cloth, which was an incredibly luxurious commodity. They also had come from the East. They had exotic spices and special wines, and some believe they brought back certain statues like the Black Madonna, things like that. So the Templars were very well-traveled, very well-versed. They weren't just knights, but they also had an extensive trading and landowning and agricultural function. They also had a naval branch. And this is something we don't often hear too much about, the idea of having an admiral. The first admiral was actually official in 1301. So they actually were not only by land, but by sea. The Templars were really moving a lot of goods around. So naturally, we might think, oh, they must have made a lot of interest. No, they couldn't do that because the church forbade the use of usury, which is charging interest. So they would get some admin fee, not interest.
That's right, the Knights Templar ruled the seas, as well as patrolling the pilgrimage routes between Europe and Jerusalem. Some researchers have even linked the symbolism of the Templars to the use of the skull and crossbones and Jolly Roger used on pirate flags. Were some famous pirates actually ex-Knights Templars who had escaped after their downfall? This is 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and our guest is Dr. Karen Rawls, author of the Knights Templar Encyclopedia. Check out Karen Rawls' website, www.ancientquest.com. That's ancientquest.com. When we come back, Dr. Rawls is going to make you wonder why so many soaring Gothic cathedrals sprang up all over Europe immediately upon the return of the original nine Knights Templars. So don't go away.
This is Trooper Iglesias with the Maryland State Police. When it comes to nut buckling up, we've heard it all. It doesn't fit. I was just going to the store. I have an airbag. It just goes on and on and on.
I got three injuries.
I got two IVs. They're running.
But the fact is, an excuse won't protect you in a crash, and it won't bring back a loved one. Why do we enforce seatbelt laws? Because they save lives. It's that simple. So please, no more excuses. Protect yourself and those you love.
This month, officers across Maryland are working together, paying special attention to unbuckled drivers and passengers. Maryland citizens have been buckling up in record numbers and lives are being saved across the state. From our small towns to the most crowded urban areas, officers are writing tickets to those who still are not buckling up. So remember, an excuse will not save you from getting a ticket.
My seatbelt doesn't fit.
It's uncomfortable.
Ma'am, it's going to cost you one way or another. We're serious about enforcing this law.
Officers across Maryland remind you, click it or ticket.
This message sponsored by the Maryland State Highway Administration's Highway Safety Office and this station.
Just because you can't sell your house doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to receive the care you need. After all, you've worked hard and deserve the best. Let us take care of you first, then we'll worry about selling your house. visit www.myhchp.com to find out how Harmony Hall Assisted Living Community is there for you. Call 410-531-6000.
Your perspective. Your perspective.
We're all talking about it.
Your insight.
Your insight.
The most amazing thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
When you want to share.
Yeah, the more you see it, the worse it gets.
When you need to
when
know.
When you need to know.
I came here today to try to stand up for the truth.
Turn to your source for news.
Source for news.
Which shows what an enormous explosion it must have been.
And stimulating talk.
And stimulating talk.
You know, what we say really makes a difference.
Talk Radio 680, WCBM.
Ever heard of Tippy the Wonder Dog, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, or Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welder? All characters of radio's greatest satirist, Bob and Ray, are subject this Sunday, plus a Solartopia vision for the planet. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Well, let's take a look inside the prize library this hour. All right, there it is. It's the book. Knight's Templar Encyclopedia, the essential guide to the people, places, events, and symbols of the Order of the Temple by our dear friend Dr. Karen Rawls and published by New Page Books, 1-800-227-3371. Now, the first correct caller is going to win that book, plus a number of other periodicals and books. And here's the question you have to answer to win it. What important event did we promote on 21st Century Radio the last 2 weeks that occurred last night in the city of Baltimore? Yep, what event that occurred last night in the city of Baltimore that we've been promoting for weeks? And obviously we attended it. We had a good time twisting the night away. Yes, indeed. But you tell us what event that was, and you're going to be the winner. But you got to qualify. Here's how you do it. If you know the answer to this hour's quiz question on 21st Century Radio and you have not won from us in the last 60 days, call in now. 410-922-6680. That's 410-WCBM-680. First with the right answer wins. Prizes are available for you to pick up at the WCBM studios in Pikesville after Friday of this week. Winners have 60 days to pick up the prizes and must wait 60 days before winning another prize from 21st Century Radio. Good luck.
This is Dr. Alan Hamilton, the author of The Scalpel and the Soul, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus, one of the great programs in my mind that is offering innovation in this century.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with me, Dr. Bob Hieronymus, as your host. Our subject tonight is the truth about the mysterious Knights Templar from a leading scholar in the field, sometimes called the female Professor Langdon, after the Da Vinci Code's main character and historic sleuth. You can order her book from New Page at 1-800-227-3371 or visit her website at ancientquest.com. Karen was just telling us about the multitudes of income streams the Knights Templar had organized at the peak of their immensely wealthy and powerful reign.
It's very fascinating how diverse their whole empire was. They would have certain feast days. They would sell, in fact, not even unlike certain village church fairs today. On a saint's day, they'll have a festival or something. They'll sell cakes or goods. Well, the Templars were often in charge of charging. They collected taxes. They also charged road tolls, like the toll fee going into a city. They had such a broad way of cleverly keeping their empire alive and thriving. One of those other ways was the agricultural side, which we often don't think about because we focus on the battlefield a lot with the Templar image. But the truth is, a lot of the wealth was actually generated back in Western Europe. The lucrative farming estates and the animals, produce, that type of thing, was there to raise money for their brothers in the East. So it was quite an interlocking network. And two of our practices today in Western banking, the safety deposit box, and also the idea of letters of credit, which sort of like you're traveling, you know, you want to get some traveler's checks. You know, it was that idea was really brought home in a big, big way in the West by the Knights Templar. And they were following, there's a few others, the Rothschilds that started in the Medici, but the Templars really got it into a much broader way in some areas. So they had quite an extensive network and sophistication about that. Of course, it was a very feudal time as well. So the church really had much more power then over many affairs than it does today. It's more distant. So again, we have to keep the backdrop of what the High Middle Ages period was like to really understand this whole thing. But no matter how you look at it, there is no doubt that after the Templars, the original nine knights returned to Western Europe to do some major fundraising, they were incredibly successful, and it was quite sudden. And some historians have pointed out, and again, this is hard to deny as well, shortly following this period, after the Council of Troyes, and Bernard of Clairvaux was from Troyes in Champagne, again, which is, you know, all roads seem to lead to Troyes with the history of the Templars. That area of Champagne and Burgundy is real, real important, and that whole point is that there was an extensive network that grew from there. And after they returned, they got more land and backing. And then suddenly, we see another thing happening all over Europe, especially in France, again, home of the Templars. We see a mushrooming of something called a new style High Gothic. And all these Gothic cathedrals started coming up. But, and I want to say this again, and I'll say it twice, we don't have any direct proof that the Knights Templars built the cathedrals. They did not build the cathedrals. They may have helped finance them in certain areas, but the guilds built the cathedrals. But we do see a new awareness of sacred geometry. And in the writings of Bernard of Clairvaux, he did make various comments about admiring the cube as the New Jerusalem. And, of course, he looked to the Hagia Sophia, special building in Istanbul, Constantinople, then, as a building that was interesting to admire, and they wanted to supersede that. And Abbé Chougar, who officially started Gothic in Saint-Denis outside of Paris, that was one of their inspirations. So again, you know, the connection of High Gothic today, as you were saying, a lot of people have speculated, and they said that there does seem to be what I would call a vicarious connection in many places with the Order of the Temple and the local Cistercians who were behind a lot of High Gothic. But that doesn't mean automatically that the Templars built the cathedrals. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, certainly, because we have the same kind of problem when we take a look at the Founding Fathers and their creation, so to speak, and the Dan Browns of the world, basically pointing to shortcut ways of history that are oversimplification and very exciting, you know, and they take over on a life of their own. But after all of the success, a plot against the medieval Templars occurred, and that's what I'd like to focus on now, and then some, of course, what happened on Friday the 13th and what they were accused of. Can we go into that?
I guess in a real quick nutshell, the way to think about this with our modern-day awareness of trials and justice, I just want to mention one quick thing. To the Inquisition in the Middle Ages, the purpose of a trial was not to prove or find the truth, because it was not a secular state matter. It was a church matter. So once someone was charged, even like with Joan of Arc, too, this type of thing, heresy or whatever, the idea was the cardinals had to question them and try to prove that the charges were true. You see what I'm saying? It was
yes.
A different focus from the very beginning. So what we have with the issue of the Knights Templar, especially after the final card in the deck fell for the Holy Land, for Christendom, which it's hard for us again to imagine the blow this was after years and years of all these wonderful victories and various issues. By 1291, the fall of Acre and everything, it was really serious. And, you know, a year or two on from that, you know, and somebody had to gradually be the scapegoat and be blamed for the lack of success. You know, after time went on, the Order of the Temple kind of lost their major reason for existence in many ways. And the church was starting to wonder whether some of the orders should be combined. And, you know, it was kind of a time of lots of questioning anyway. But we have two characters in this drama that are very central to the arrest and especially trials, which, by the way, there was not one trial. There were at least five or six or seven of them over a period of 7 years. The main character, of course, is the Pope Clement V, which now we know from further study he was a rather clever politically in some ways, but he's rather weak-willed politically, and he was, frankly, it's become quite clear, he was very much dominated by the very powerful and ambitious, and many would say greedy, King Philippe IV of France. And he was the French king that was really the instigator of the setting up the charges, you might say. After the fall of the Holy Land, everyone was getting very demoralized, and it was not a good time for anyone to really openly tout the Templars in the same manner as they had before. So King Philippe thought, here's my chance. You know, everyone's demoralized. He also owed them a lot of money. And we have to remember, again, the great wealth of the Order of the Temple was really extraordinary. By today's standards, they would have the major bank vaults of all the banks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were it, you know? And they were literally the treasurers to many kings and popes throughout their history. So they had extensive wealth. So he wanted his hands on that because he was running out of funds from the Crusades also. He wanted money and power. And he also wanted to be seen throughout all of Europe as the most Christian king. He really had lots of different motives. So he arranged, in a sense, for what might term a collusion effort with Clement V, the Pope, the weaker Pope. He used all kinds of bully tactics on the Pope, and, you know, we've now come to more fully understand that aspect. But between the two of them, the Templars were still at that point a large organization based not just in France, but in England, Germany, in Italy, everywhere. But the arrests were very sudden. It was still a pretty illustrious order. Everyone really respected the Templars, even though they knew they lost the Holy Land, but they still had incredible respect. Everyone was absolutely astounded. I mean, today it's like you get up, have your coffee, 7 o'clock, read the newspaper, and in the screaming headline of the most famous, respected people have been suddenly arrested in every single province of your country.
Sounds a little bit like today sometimes.
In a way, it's like this tabloid effect. Yeah, it was really that kind of a shock, and people were like, oh, this can't be right. Sure, the Templars weren't guilty. This is ridiculous, you know? And the king was, of course, gloating, no doubt, but from the steps of Notre Dame Cathedral, the charges were read out, and they were ghastly by medieval standards. They were accused of blasphemy and all kinds of, you know, denying Christ, you know, which was at that point just unthinkable crime for anyone, spitting on the cross, which most people thought, there's no way a Templar would do that, you know. So there was all of this public shock and debate, and a lot of people just couldn't believe this. They were wondering, well, what dirt did they have on them? Is there some secret going on? So then, of course, the rumor mill began. I guess that would probably happen today as well. But the long story short, basically, that was sudden roundup. And there have been questions about, were they tipped off? I mean, if the Templars were that powerful, surely they would have, you know, had informants or something. Well, for the most part, it appears they were taken by surprise. And one or two areas in the Languedoc, we think they may have gotten a bit of word from their friends in Aragon. But for the most part, it was a sudden roundup. So they were put in prison, and this included the Grand Master, Jacques de Molay, who was tricked at a funeral to be a pallbearer, and then he suddenly was in prison that evening. I mean, it was really incredible how the king was very clever, how he set all this up. So there were the Templars rounded up. Now, eventually, because of the church administration procedures for an inquisition, they were asked many questions, and as we know from medieval history, of course, there were horrible tortures that they didn't feel they were getting the answers they wanted or needed. Now remember, the purpose was not to find the truth, but it was to prove the charges. So if someone didn't answer what they needed, they would apply the rack and all of these terrible, you know, burning your soles of your feet and all these unbelievable tortures over a period of time. But there were many various trials in France held, but we might ask, well, what about the Templars in England or Italy or Germany? Well, that's where it gets very interesting, because even the Pope had some questions at this point for the French king. He said, how can you just round these, you know, I'm the Pope, they are my militia, my warriors, I should have some right as to how the trial proceeds. Well, what seems to have happened is the Pope was not included on all of the debates and arguments. So the King of France and the Pope started to argue. And then the King of England, Edward, said, I don't believe you. I don't believe the Templars are guilty. Because at that point, the French king had gotten the Pope to write to all the other kings of Europe and said, round up all the Templars. You know, they're guilty. They've done all these horrible things. And if you don't, you will lose your soul in hell, you know. So that was the ultimate threat. So the problem they had then was the other monarchs did not believe these charges because the Templars had brought them a lot of success in the Crusades. They brought them, obviously, wealth to the community. They brought them wool. They brought them sheep. They were protecting pilgrims. They were collecting taxes. I mean, these knights were real handy and good to them in many ways.
Yeah,
so they couldn't believe it. Edward did not arrest the Templars right away. He refused. And, you know, it took a long time to get some of the countries. In Germany, many of the Templars ended up escaping. Parts of Italy, they were tortured very badly. Other parts, we don't know what happened to them. The arrest was initially a French issue. And only later, sometimes it took a year or two before all the other countries complied, but they finally did because the Pope really put pressure on them. He was, you know, had his own concerns politically about his own position, his own power, and, you know, his own regime. So they all capitulated eventually. However, it's very uneven as to which nation used torture. And it took a long time, if at all, for some countries to apply torture to Templar knights. In France, it was by far the worst. And, surprise, that's where they got the most confessions. The Templars were a complex organization of many nations, not just, you know, quote, the Templars, meaning one thing, because it was actually quite diverse and quite different in many different areas. And
well, that's what's so important about your research, Karen, of working in these particular areas, that many have already assumed a number of things. There are a lot of books out, as you well know, that assume all kinds of things in regards to the Templars. And, you know, as you noted, they didn't build the Gothic cathedrals, but my heavens, there are whole books on that say that they did, and the documentation is pretty sparse. There's been an oversimplification as to who they are and what they were doing. And the deeper you get into any of these areas, and the finer the details, you begin to lose the popular view of things, which like to see, you know, these individuals sometimes like Robin Hoods.
That's a very similar topic, really. That there's
yes, it is.
Theories.
When you touch on a little later on, we'll get to the Grail. The romances and how were they linked to the Templars, etc. But would you like to finish up where you were, what you were discussing?
About the trials, I was just saying, you know, we often think the trials would only happened in France, but that's not true. In fact, there's some in my Knights Templar Encyclopedia, I have real extensive information about each country and what exactly happened. But in Germany was one of the most funny situations. The Templars actually were accused, you know, of course, in some hearing, and then some of their fellow knights actually burst into the room and took on the Inquisitor. I mean, it's...
Whoa!
I know, it's amazing. It's just like you can't... And I thought, well, there's real Templars for you, you know.
There's a real movie there,
just break the door down and take on the prosecutor. But that is actually documented history. And my point being, you hear about a lot of speculation, but we often don't hear about some of the truly documented things that are very fascinating.
Yes, yes. We have to break here for the news, but when we return, you are in for a treat. After the arrest and suppression of the Knights Templar, the question of what happened next is the stuff of Hollywood legends. Did they go underground? Did they sneak off to Scotland and bury the Holy Grail at Roslyn Chapel, leaving clues all over the chapel's carvings? Did they sail for the New World and infiltrate the Freemasons in order to found the new United States of America? Who knows? Dr. Karen Rawls will tell us what is known as historically accurate. Buy her book, The Knights Templar Encyclopedia, The Essential Guide to the People, Places, Events, and Symbols of the Order of the Temple, from New Page Books, 1-800-227-3371. Karen Rawls' website is ancientquest.com. That's ancientquest.com. Well, great news. You know, Leon Day is smiling down from heaven today because his namesake grandson, 14-year-old Leon Newkirk has been nominated to represent the state of Maryland as a national scholar at the National Young Leaders Conference in Washington, D.C. this summer in 2009, and the bad news is that accepting this honor comes with a $2,000 price tag to cover the tuition and housing costs for the 10-day event. More on this when we return next hour at the very end of the hour.
Talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheelis. While in Turkey, President Obama will ask for help with the fight against the Taliban in Afghanistan. He also wants Turkey's help to rein in North Korea, which launched a long-range missile.
They, I think, have taken a provocative action. It creates instability in their region, around the world.
The U.N. Security Council met but did not take any action today. A resolution will be floated tomorrow. A lover scorned. Sheriff's officials in Washington State believe a man killed his kids and himself because his wife was leaving him. This neighbor says she called Child Protective Services in the past.
When I called, it was because we would be inside of our home with all the doors shut and everything, and we could hear him in his home screaming at his kids.
The kids ranged in age from 7 to 16. Police in Binghamton, New York are still trying to figure out why a gunman targeted the American Civic Association last week.
One of the first things we're going to start looking at is any personal relationships he may or may not have with those poor victims that were executed in that room.
Police Chief Joe Zagusky. Now, there was a vigil at a middle school today. CEOs are being put on notice. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner says in the future, banks that need bigger government help may be forced to toss out their executives. The Obama administration has taken flak because it ousted General Motors CEO, but did not change management at banking institutions.
Nice car, baby.
The Fast and Furious set a new record at the box office. ABC's David Blaustein reports.
Fast and Furious set a record for an April release, taking in a mind-blowing $72.5 million. Monsters vs. Aliens didn't come anywhere close to Fast and Furious, but finished second with a respectable $33.5 million, giving the DreamWorks animated feature $105.7 million in just 10 days.
You're listening to ABC News.
For some people, seasonal allergies are no big deal. For me, they are. The sneezing, itchy, runny nose, and congestion make me miserable. Finally, I got some professional help. My doctor prescribed Astepro. Astepro is a powerful antihistamine nasal spray that goes right to the site of my symptoms. My nose. Makes sense, right? Astepro is approved to relieve seasonal nasal allergy symptoms, including sneezing, itchy, runny nose, and congestion.
Astepro azelastine hydrochloride is available by prescription only for people 12 and over. If you're allergic to Astepro, Astelin, or azelastine, don't use it. Also avoid alcohol, sedatives, operating machinery, and driving. Side effects may include unusual taste, nosebleeds, headache, fatigue, and sleepiness. Learn more at astepro.com. Call 1-866-516-1970 or find information in U.S. News and World Report.
If you're like me, seasonal allergies are a big deal. Ask your doctor about Astepro today and treat your nasal symptoms right at the site.
A number of conservatives don't believe the GOP is all that grand right now. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich told Fox News Sunday the party of small government went on a spending spree.
Republicans need to understand that there is a country which did not like the big spending of the last administration, didn't like the interventionist policies of the last administration, and the country at large would like to see a genuine alternative.
Gingrich says some conservatives may leave the GOP to form a new party in 2012. A dog may have sparked a deadly shooting over the weekend, ABC's Chuck Siebertson explains.
At that Pittsburgh house where 100 rounds of ammo was fired, court papers in the case say it all started when the accused gunman's mom phoned 911 complaining that a dog urinated in the house, leading to an argument, and then the mom threatening to evict her son, 23-year-old Richard Poplowski, who was arrested wearing a bulletproof vest with leg wounds. He's in the hospital charged with murder. Three police officers are dead. Two others are wounded.
ABC's Chuck Siebertson. President Obama is proving popular in Europe, but the First Lady has been making headlines with her outfits and an embrace with the Queen of England. Presidential advisor David Axelrod says the president loves it.
He's happy to bask in her reflected glow.
Axelrod says they're all aware that Michelle Obama's poll numbers are higher than that of her husband. This is ABC News.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
They say the best defense is a good offense. But when it comes to safe driving, GEICO believes a good defense is, well, a good defense. If you're 50 or older and you complete an approved defensive driving course, you could qualify for a special discount on your GEICO car insurance, up to an additional 10%. Wow, sounds more like a defensive savings course.
For details, visit GEICO.com, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Special discount not available in all states.
I'm Brad Wheatless, ABC News.
This is Tony Pham. The forecast for tonight, expect mostly clear skies. It'll be breezy and kind of chilly, with low temperatures dropping into the upper 30s. During the day on Sunday, should be nice. Mixture of sunshine and clouds, the high temperatures in the mid to maybe the upper 60s. A chance for rain showers on Sunday night, especially during the day on Monday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are likely, with highs near 60. It'll dry out and turn colder on Tuesday, with high temperatures only in the upper 40s. From the WCBM Weather Center, this is Tony Pham.
Radio 680 WCBM. 21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.